Welcome to the Financial Coaches Podcast, where we talk about how to build your practice from startup to scale up while being the kind of coach your clients crave. Finally, a podcast for financial coaches. Here are your hosts, Maria Casillas and Cody Sizemore.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Financial Coaches Podcast. I am your co-host, Maria Casillas, joined here by my incredible co-host, Cody Sizemore. And we are excited to have a chat with you today about group coaching. But before we do that, I definitely want to make sure that we invite you to join our Facebook group. You can find us in Facebook at the New Money Habit. Nope, I lied. It is at the Financial Coaches group by New Money Habits. And we'd love to have you in there. And that's where we're going to ask all the questions that you have after each episode, and we can address those individually there. All right, Cody, how are you doing today?
Doing great. Yeah,
good.
Doing good.
Very doing good. Good. Glad to hear it. Yeah. So I know that this is something you wanted to talk about, so I'm actually going to let you jump in with it, but I'll just set it up by talking about saying that what we're talking about today is when to transition from one-to-one coaching down to or up to or over to group coaching, and just some of the nuances around that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think that this is a really good topic to talk about because, you know, everyone is wanting to, you know, I mean, I would assume that everyone listening to this show wants to be a financial coach or is a financial coach, right? Mm-hmm. And then as that process of, you know, growing your practice and helping and serving more people goes, we find that as we grow, there are We go to these new levels, right? And with every new level, there is a new devil to have to overcome, right? Mm-hmm. And as something that I found is as I was like growing my practice, scaling my practice, that one of those new levels that I got into and also new devil I had to kind of overcome was this idea of my time, you know? I got things to the point to where I was only doing one-on-one. And I was literally glued to my computer all morning, all day, all night. And it just was a lot, you know? Yeah. And like, there's a part of me that was like, I want to keep growing. I want to keep growing because that's just who I am. But then there's the other part of me that's like, I want to take care of myself. I want to see my family, like all these different types of things, right? Yeah. So there's that conflicting, you know, there's that confliction going on there. Yeah. And I finally got to the point where I was like, how can I still serve just as many people now, or possibly even more, but then spending less time on it, you know? And that's where this idea and this concept was brought to me about group coaching. And I've been doing that for a while now, and it's really changed quite a bit for me in a lot of really awesome ways. So that's why I wanted to bring this up.
Okay. Well, I'm excited to hear what you have to say about it. What are some of the tenets that you want to talk about?
Yeah. So I think that we should probably talk about like three pillars. So number one would be, when do you know when you should potentially like, you know, either transition into group coaching or at least introduce it as a part of your practice.
Okay.
I also think it's important to talk about some limiting or disempowering belief systems around group coaching as well. Because I know that when I first did it, I definitely had some that were scary to me, and I almost didn't do it because of those, but I'm glad that I did. Mm-hmm. And I also think that it's important to talk about what kind of group programs there might be as well.
Okay.
You know, all right. So those three pillars.
All right. I think this is a really good discussion. Okay. So let's go ahead and start with that first one that you talked about. When on earth is it time to start thinking about introducing group coaching into your practice?
Yeah. So as you are growing and scaling your business, naturally you are going to be spending more time on it and in it just because you're serving more people, right? So there's basically two ways to combat that of like still keeping your time in a healthy amount of time that you're spending on the business while also, you know, spending time on yourself or your family and stuff like that. Number one would be to raise your prices. Naturally, if you raise your prices, you're probably not going to be working with as many people. So, you know, that frees up more time, but it still brings in maybe the same amount of income or revenue for you, or possibly even slightly more, right? Mm-hmm. But then you might do that and you might get to a point to where you've ran into the same issue again because you've gotten better at coaching and you've gotten better at onboarding new clients. So now you're like, well, I already raised my prices. I feel like I'm at a good spot. I don't want to raise any more. But now I'm still feeling at this place to where, hey, I'm still glued and I'm still putting so much into this. And I think that that part is when you should make the transition or add in group coaching into your practice, to where the time and not the time, but the place of your business and your practice is where your time is becoming more and more valuable, and you want to make sure that you can free up more of it, and you feel like you've already raised the investment of your coaching program to a place to where you feel comfortable with it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, that's when I think you should do it.
Okay. I think I have some questions or some comments around that, but I'm actually going to reserve them because I have a feeling you might address some of them in the other couple of bullet points that we talk about. And I want to make sure that I ask them in a way that can be answered well. So let's go on to the disempowering belief that, that you have not only experienced, but you know, other coaches listening today will also probably experience.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I initially was thinking about doing this, there was several things that were going through my head. One of which was, am I good enough to actually serve enough people or serve multiple people at the same time? Can I handle that? Right? So that was definitely a limiting and disempowering belief, was just the old adage of like that imposter syndrome, like, am I good enough kind of thing. Another one that I dealt with too was, hey, is this possible to do? Because as we talk about on this show all the time, like, personal finance is personal, right? So even though you might have two or, you know, a group of four or five people who are all kind of working on maybe similar goals, whether it be debt, savings, house, investing, they might have similar goals, but their situations are completely different from person to person to person. So is it even possible to bring people together as a unit who have different situations going on, right? That was another limiting belief that I had. And I think another one was, are people even going to want to do this? Because as we know, sometimes this topic of money can be personal. It can be kind of like almost taboo for some people, you know? To where I kind of thought, like, are people even going to want to share their finances with other people in a group? Like, you know, do they want to keep it behind closed doors? Like, why would someone want to be completely open with people to show them exactly what they got going on like a deep level? Are people even going to want to do this?
Yeah. You know, there's like a level of privacy that oftentimes people want to maintain.
Yeah. So those were some of the limiting or disempowering beliefs that I dealt with. And of course, there's a few other ones too, but I think those were probably the three main ones.
Okay. Very good. And what are some of the different types of group coaching that you do?
So I actually would be happy to get into that, but if it's okay with you, I actually want to talk about these limiting beliefs a little bit deeper.
Okay. Yeah, we can. Yeah. Okay. I was actually, yes, that we can absolutely do that. I'm not trying to get away from it. I actually think that some of the beliefs might go into some of what you're going to talk about next, but go ahead. Let's talk about the release first.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So I almost didn't do this, but there was one thing that I did that really, really helped me.
Okay.
And it was a suggestion from a coach that I had at the time. I had enrolled into like a business coaching program to help me scale the business. And one of the things that they specialized with was group coaching. Right. So I told him about this and he had me do an exercise that was super helpful. So helpful that I've actually borrowed it and I use it with some of my clients now when they have, you know, different limiting or disempowering beliefs about things. And he called it a 50 stack. So basically the way that he explained it is like, if we were to picture like a table, right? And a traditional table will have like, you know, the tabletop, and then it'll have those four legs underneath it. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And he basically said that those legs underneath the table, they represent empowering beliefs. And at that moment, I only had one leg under my tabletop. And that one leg was, I think I want to do group coaching. Right. Which, and he was like, that's a real,
it's a really weak leg too, but
yeah, right. Right. And he's like, that's a really wobbly table,
mm-hmm.
really
mm-hmm.
wobbly table. Mm-hmm. So what we need to do is we need to get more legs under this table, and not just four strong core beliefs that are empowering about this, but we want to make this the most sturdy table that the world has ever seen. And we want to get 50 legs under this table.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So mm-hmm. what he had me do is he had me like write out a statement that just says, group coaching is going to be beneficial to me and my clients. That was like the belief, right?
Okay.
The initial belief. And then he made me, or he had me make a list of 50 beliefs that were backing up that first one. So 50 reasons as to why that first statement is true, right? Mm-hmm. So I broke it down and I said, well, here's 25 of why it's true for me, and here's 25 as to why it's true for my clients. And okay. after I did that, it was like a no-brainer. I was like, mm-hmm. looking at this list, there's so many benefits to this that I would be stupid not to do this, you know? Mm-hmm. So doing an exercise like that is good for any sort of limiting beliefs, disempowering beliefs that you might have, not just around group coaching, but also really anything that you have in life, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, awesome. I just think that that's a really good way to overcome those.
Yeah. And as I assumed you were going to somehow answer some of the stuff I was going to ask earlier, I wanted to make sure that it's not just beneficial for us as the mm-hmm. coaches, that yes. it ultimately is going to be beneficial for the client as well. And so I'm actually very encouraged to know that that is where you kind of split that down the middle, that you did 25 and 25, not that you had to do it that way. You probably yeah. could have come up with 50 and 50, to be honest.
I could have, yeah.
But the fact that that was even the top limiting belief that you switched around to turn into an empowering belief, that it is going to be beneficial for me and my clients. That I think is just super important. And I'm really glad that you brought that up. So mm-hmm. just for the sake of our audience, if I know you don't have this list in front of you, but it's yours. And so do you remember like the maybe two or three favorites from each side of that by chance?
I don't remember, but I can pull it up right now, actually.
Okay.
Because I have
another one of those things that I just throw there out at you. But when it became a no-brainer, I mean, I think sometimes it's difficult for us to get our minds going, you know, and get those wheels greased a little bit. So that's really why I'm having you do this, is for our listeners to get their wheels greased so they can go, oh, I see what he means by beneficial to myself and beneficial to them.
Yeah. So I'll go ahead and actually share my screen. For okay. those of you who are watching on YouTube,
you can get just to see all 50 of them.
Yeah. So, it was titled 50 Stack for Group Coaching Empowerment, right? So the blue is client benefits and the orange is, coach benefits. So I'll just read like maybe like the first 5 or 10 of each one. I'm not going to go through the whole thing,
sure.
But for the clients, it was like, it'll allow the same amount of value from coaching in a fraction of the time. It'll allow them to have more time and opportunity after the program completes. It will allow them to feed off energy of other clients. It will allow them to have more time with me on calls. It will allow the other clients, or it'll have other clients holding them accountable as well, not just for me. It will allow clients to set higher standards for themselves. They will have more support. It will create a better environment. You'll have the ability to have multiple cheerleaders. It will allow clients to become leaders themselves. So that's just a few of them, right? Because when you're part of a tribe or like a group, you know, all those things start to come to fruition, right? Mm-hmm. And then for the coach side of things, it says it will allow me to scale my business revenue. It will allow me to create more impact in a shorter amount of time. It will allow me to serve more people. It'll allow my schedule to open up for my family. It'll allow my wife to eventually become a stay-at-home mom. It'll allow my wife to start her own business if she wanted to. It'll strengthen my relationship and presence with my kids. Like, you know, so many different types of things, right? Mm-hmm. And that's just a couple examples, but I think that that probably answers your question, Maria.
It does. It was a great answer. And for those of you who are watching today, you get the extra benefit of being able to see a lot more than what Cody just read for us on the actual episode. But it actually goes back to the first part of this episode where you talked about the timing of deciding whether or not to do a group coaching program. And that's kind of one of the reasons that I wanted to go into the different types first, because what the commentary that I'm going to say actually includes some of that. So do you mind just sharing the different types, and then I'll come back to some of what I was going to talk about?
Yeah. So I want to preface this with saying that these are not the only kinds of types that you can do, but this is just like me personally, this is what I do, right? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I have two different types of groups. One would be what I would call like the core curriculum group. So, you know, people who are new clients, like they've never gone through financial coaching before. And like, this is like their first experience with it. So like, there's a lot of teaching points. There's a lot of exercises. There's a lot of new learnings, a lot of implementation, action taking, like all this kind of stuff, right? So that would be like one type of group, to where it's like literally like what you do with your one-on-one clients, but just in a group mm-hmm. setting, you know?
Yep.
And then the other type of group that I do is for my clients that I would say have quote unquote graduated from the core curriculum program. And this can be people from my group program. This can be people from my one-on-one clients, but they're just people who want to keep the momentum going and continue to have support with their finances after the original program is done. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's like a maintenance kind of program. And that one is a longer period of time. We meet a little bit less frequently, but still like on a consistent basis. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily about like teaching all the time. Like there's definitely some teaching in there, but a lot of it is really just meeting them where they're at and giving them the support that they need in that current time of their journey. You know,
sure.
So that's my
two different
groups I have.
Yeah. And that one probably ends up being a little bit bigger at times than the other one. Maybe you don't have as many parameters on how big that one can get, because you're not quite as specific in there. You're not addressing mm-hmm. a lot of their privacy issues, that kind of thing. Okay, perfect. So I'm really glad that you were able to share all that, because I think that all of these things tie together in terms of how people are trying to decide when it is the right time for them to actually start doing some of this. And when you first started talking, you mentioned that it has more to do with your timing and how much time you have to give. And then that's when it builds up and you've already done your pricing structure. Then it's time to open this group program. I'm not disagreeing with that, but I'm actually going to add to it, if I may, because when I first started coaching, before group coaching was even something that was cool or that was trendy, I immediately wanted to have some sort of group component in my coaching. And it didn't matter whether I had 500 clients or if I had 3 clients, that every single client would go through some form of group coaching. Now, when I first started, this was before the boom of the Zoom, and all of a sudden we had, you know, the ability to talk to everybody everywhere. So the clients that I was working with were actually very local, and I was doing this inside my home. So it wasn't a living room, but I had my home office, and it was set up in a way where there was an actual kitchen table in there, and we had, you know, we were able to sit around in a physical group setting. And I think that the reason that was so important for me was because of my counseling background, and I did both one-to-one and group counseling back in the day. And I was able to see many of those benefits that you just read for our listeners today, Cody. And I think one of the things, the reason I'm bringing this up is because once they see that, and like you said, hey, once I saw it on paper, it was a no-brainer. And I don't want people to think, well, it's a no-brainer to be able to offer this for my clients, but I should probably wait until I have the one-on-ones and then I have enough clients and then da-da-da-da-da, right? I want to encourage people and empower you that if you think that the benefits of the group component are actually going to be there, whether you have two clients or 20 clients, I think it's okay to start doing a little bit of that now. And even if it's just a couple clients, they know that it's going to be small. So you don't have that pressure on yourself to make sure it looks fancy and that you have 10 people in your group. You can actually grow that group along with your practice, and they're still going to be getting a lot of the benefits that they did before. Now, I will say in full disclosure that when I did this, when I first started, it was definitely a hybrid. I did not do all group altogether and just, you know, completely avoid the one-to-one. What I did was a lot of the teaching things that was applicable to everybody was done more in that group setting. And so was the accountability. That piece was definitely done in the group setting. And then when we were kind of digging into their physical numbers, we did a lot more of that on the one-to-one basis. That's because I didn't have very many clients and my time still allowed for that. But I just wanted to share that because I know sometimes it's easy to just say, well, I don't need to do this. But you don't need to, but you don't need to wait until it's just a time constraint for you, because there is a benefit for the client outside of that. Should I go to the next thing, or do you have anything to add to that?
The only thing I would add to that is just to say that I agree, you know, like,
okay.
Yeah, you know, and one thing that you said that I really liked was you said, even if you have two clients or three clients, as long as like they know that like, hey, it's a small, you know, tight knit group and you're okay with that and you don't have that like expectation weighing on you, then go for it, you know?
Yeah.
Me personally, I mean, you know how I am. I'm like, hey, you know, if I don't have at least five people in this group, I don't want to do the group kind of thing, you know, because I'm like, I'm kind of like an all in kind of guy. But if you're, you know, if you operate differently than me and you see value in that, then you should absolutely do that. So I'm glad that you brought that up.
Yeah, good. Thank you. The other thing I want to just make sure that I mention is the dynamics of the group that you have. So it's not just a numbers thing. I mean, you really do want to make sure that the people who are in that group will meld well together. And it's not your job to, you know, make sure that everyone, it's not a therapy group, so you're okay in that. But I do know that sometimes just having a common language around which to speak is, it makes it a lot easier for people to not get hurt feelings and for them to actually understand what's going on. I mean, I'm sure I've absolutely driven you crazy, Cody, with all the ideas about meaning behind words and all of that, but it really does matter. And so if you've got, you know, people in the group who are just so opposite end of any given spectrum, it's going to be hard to communicate in that group. And that's going to be a lot harder for you then to manage. So just remember that as you're deciding who is a good candidate for this group, as if you are like Cody and you're wanting like, you know, 5, 10, 25 people, at that point, you might just end up doing two or three groups, and then you'll have the opportunity to know which group is this particular client or couple going to be able to fit nicely into. And so that's something else to definitely keep in mind.
I completely agree. Yeah, you need to vet your clients and make sure that they're a good fit for whether it be your core curriculum group or your, you know, your maintenance group, whatever it might be. But there have been several people where I've considered offering in the group, and then I was like, I think I'm actually gonna just do one-on-one with you.
Yeah. Well, because if it doesn't serve them and or it takes away from the value for the other clients, like if it, all those values that you did such a good job listing, if putting one toxic person in there is going to take away all of that, then that's not good. And when I say toxic person, it might not even be someone who's actually toxic, but they might be toxic for the group. If there's someone who's actually toxic, you're probably not going to work with them anyway. But if they are someone you can work with, but they won't play well with others, probably not a good fit for that group setting. So that's definitely something. And then the final thing that I'll say is that if you're listening today and this whole idea about group is kind of overwhelming, I would suggest, now I haven't run this by the expert over here, but I would I would suggest starting with the maintenance type of group. The reason I would suggest that personally is because it takes the pressure off of you to have to create a core curriculum, figuring out like, how is this going to benefit this person over here when they're in a different spot than this person over here, that kind of thing. Also, it allows you to start right where you are, friend. Like if you've got a client, they will eventually need maintenance. And that's just a really good spot to start and go, hey, I've got this group I'm starting to give you that extra support. And it gives you the opportunity to try the dynamics of a group and figure out all of the technology that has to go along with that and just work through some of those bugs. And then you can build yourself up to a core curriculum group later on.
Yep. Great point. Great point. And I would add that as you're getting that started, you could even reach out to past clients that, you know, Amen. You worked with before, you've stopped working with them, mm-hmm. and maybe it's been 6 months or a year, and you just check in, you know, see, you hop on a call, see how they're doing, tell them what you're doing, you know, and let them know that you thought about them and you thought it'd be they would be a good fit and it'd benefit them. And that can be your core, you know, group of people that you kind of like use to like springboard it. And then as you work with your current clients and they end up graduating your course or whatever it might be, you can then just start adding them to that maintenance group.
Yep. Great add.
So,
well, this is really fun. I'm glad that we were able to unpack some of that because I think there was so much value in there. And it's always fun because we come from different places, but oftentimes have very, very similar core values. So it turns mm-hmm. out to be good conversation. Mm-hmm. Thanks as always. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
All right, you guys. Well, thank you for tuning in again for another episode of the Financial Coaches Podcast. Cody and I look forward to seeing you again next week, where we will talk about another titillating topic. See you guys then. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Financial Coaches Podcast, brought to you by New Money Habits and Sizemore Financial Coaching. Submit your questions to our hosts by emailing podcast@newmoneyhabits.com. Be sure to subscribe to be notified of future episodes and join our growing group of like-minded coaches on Facebook. And until next time, happy coaching. Music provided by Summer School.